Mark, O mighty one, our sacrifice begins. We commence.
Welcome to Spellbird, a podcast about the Dungeon Crawl Classics role-playing game. It's time to party like it's 1974.
In this episode, we are spellburning everything as we reach through the ethos to another continent and traverse multiple lines of latitude and longitude to summon one of the very first fans of DCC RPG, South of the Equator. You've heard tonight's special guest's name so often, it should be no surprise that we're talking about our very own multilingual writer and artist from Brazil, Judge Diogo Nogueira. In case any of our listeners plan on traveling to lovely Rio this year, we'll tell you what to expect on the gaming scene and preview some local specialty cuisine like rat salad. I'm Judge Jen, and with me tonight are Judge Jeff.
Hello!
And our long overdue rock star, Judge Diogo.
Yay, Diogo.
Hey, hello, guys. It's great to be here. It's great to talk to you again, and hope to see you soon on Gen Con this year.
Yes.
Yay. And sadly, Julian can't be with us tonight. He appears to have rolled a crit fail on his spell check for this summoning.
Yeah, I think he might have been consumed by a swarm of bees.
That is a hell of a mercurial effect, man. So without much ado, let's head on over to Tavern Talk.
Welcome, friends. Good to see you.
I only had one drink to calm my nerves.
Innkeeper, a drink of your most expensive.
Tavern Talk.
So over here in the tavern, talk about what we've done in gaming for the past week or so. And we will start with you, Diogo.
Here in Rio, we do on weekends many like really mini cons on like some public place like bookstores or restaurants or like the food court on shopping malls. And I went to a mini event on a bookstore called Livraria Cultura. And I judged my first Road Crew game of the year. And I started with a classic, the Sailors of the Stormless Sea. And we had a blast. We had some new players to GCC and some old fanatics. And because we're just releasing the Brazilian edition of GCC now, and a lot of people are starting to try it out and talk about it and look for where they can buy it or not. Because just the backers from the crowdfunding we had here in Brazil are getting it yet. So people are like, where can I buy this? Where can I buy this? Where can I get the PDF or the book? And things like that. So it was pretty fun, like showing the actual book in Portuguese to people. And
jealous.
Really, really great.
And that's awesome.
I've been writing some stuff and doing some artwork for some upcoming adventures for a cool RPG I really like. And I don't know if I can say I'm working on it, but it's been pretty exciting. And work on my own gaming stuff and started to write what I want to make for the English edition of Caveira Verazzini. And that's it, I guess.
That's awesome. We will definitely plunge into those in our mighty deeds here.
Heck yeah.
Hey, Jeff, how about you?
When was that? That was about 11 days ago. I was in the most recent session of Andrew Sternick's DCC campaign, where I'm playing Janna, the teenage girl who was stolen away to Elfland for a year, and now she's back. I've got my preserved aardvark heart around a chain. I have discovered that because I have no memory of when I was in Elfland, and I've discovered that although it was a year in our world, it was only a day in Elfland. And so I actually gleaned very little during my one day while I was in Elfland. But I'm back and we're adventuring. And I've now made my patron bond with the King of Elfland. He has appeared to me. And so that's all pretty fun and exciting stuff. And we'll be playing that game again in 3 days, picking that back up. And the day after tomorrow, I'm going to be running my first Road Crew game of the year. I will be running Judge Julian Bernick's Hive of the Overmind as part one of six of my little mini MCC campaign that I'll be running for the DCC NYC meetup group. So if anybody is in New York and would like to come check out the MCC mini campaign I'm running, go to meetup.com, DCC NYC, and sign up.
Y'all are making me sound like the slacker over here. January is absolutely my busiest month for real life work. So not a whole lot in running games. I did that the first weekend of the month for our public game day. So I at least have one Road Crew game under my belt so far this year. But otherwise, it's been AD&D, Metamorphosis Alpha, Rogue Trader, Star Wars, you know, kind of getting back into the Sci-Friday thing over at our FLGS.
That is a lot.
It's playing. You know, it rotates every Friday.
Well, that's fantastic. I love that.
Yeah, that's great. We don't have anything like that here.
And also, you're saying you're the lazy one. Both of you have already run a Road Crew game. I'm running my first one the day after tomorrow. So you guys are ahead of me on that.
I got mine out of the way before the rest of real life kicked my butt. My goal is at least one a month, and I'm hoping to break 20 again by the end of the year.
Yeah, I'm going to try for that too.
Yeah, big words. I got to finish editing too.
Oh, you know, after I capped out, it didn't occur to me to keep counting. Now I'm curious if I capped 20 last year. I feel like I must have.
I think my highest was 23, but I also think that was back in 2014 or 15.
Oh, man. Now I'm feeling challenged. Now I feel like I have to go and find out the exact number, which I can easily do, but it would take a little bit. I can't do it quickly.
Challenge. All right. While Jeff contemplates math, we'll go over to summon email.
I call upon the flame to summon you.
Who'll deliver the message for me?
I came here to give you these facts.
Summon email.
All right. Looks like we got a couple in the bag for tonight. Plus, you dug up some stuff from our last show, right, Jeff?
I sure did. On our last episode on diversity and inclusiveness, we have been getting a really amazing response to that episode on Twitter, especially. We've got a bunch of tweets. Your King Mob tweeted at us saying, thank you so much for this podcast. It's very important to understand that we don't need to include the worst parts of the OSR/pulp in our games. Bruce C tweets, another awesome episode of Spellburn. Reminds me that the most important two words when I'm promoting a game aren't anything to do with the game or even the free swag. They are simply all welcome.
Nice.
And Ethan Schoonover tweets, Jeff, thank you so much for the latest diversity, inclusivity, representation episode of Spellburn. I have really been thinking a lot about these issues lately, and you enunciated many of my own thoughts on the matter perfectly. And Wales Lake tweeted, brilliant talk about representation in RPGs by the Spellburn crew in the latest episode. As a straight white cis male, I like to learn about how I can help making our people welcome and help making other people welcome in gaming. And also Thick Skull Adventures tweeted, great episode about an important topic. And I would like to say that speaking of Thick Skull Adventures, it did, since our last episode, it was pointed out to me that Thick Skull Adventures has a very diverse roster of artists and designers, etc. And also that Goodman Games has at least one artist in the forthcoming Linkmar box set who definitely qualifies.
Oh, so, yes.
Yeah, so this is all great to hear, and I really hope that others are inspired by their lead. Also, want to quickly say we have received many emails about the episode as well, which we will get to in future mailbag episodes. And so far, the response has been overwhelmingly positive. We do have one very negative response from a DCC luminary, which will be very fun to explore on a future episode. I do look forward to responding to that one. And that one is it's so like wonderfully juicy that we may end up doing that one out of order. And also because it's a person whose name we all probably know. Of course we know. Why do I include the word probably? We all definitely know We'll know the name when I say who it's from. So maybe on the next episode or the one after that, we'll read that email and discuss that. But yes, very exciting response to our last episode.
And I know on other social media platforms, our Judge Joan Troyer had some very positive things to say about it as well. And it's helped her out in a personal situation, which is also awesome.
That's true. The comments thread of the G+ post, there was a lot of support.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to say as well there should be, but really with this group, I wouldn't have expected a whole lot of different response. And that just shows what awesome people you guys are.
Yeah, I think I was still a little shell-shocked by the Clyde Caldwell post that I had put on Facebook that one time and kind of the overwhelmingly negative response to that. But I was expecting big backlash to our last episode. But really, the only negative response we got is that one email. So that's pretty exciting.
Give it time.
We got much of support on that topic too, right? Like, not everybody was like saying it wasn't an issue, I guess. At least as I remember the topic on the Facebook group, right?
Are you referring to the original post that he made about those covers?
Yeah.
The comments on that Facebook post got pretty nasty pretty quick, and a lot of people were saying that, like, I hate women, and that's why I'm posting things like that, and it got really weird.
Yeah, it did. They had to lock down the post. And
remember, like, just two guys, like, saying this stuff, but maybe I didn't follow up all the...
No, I think you're right. Maybe it actually wasn't very many people. They were just very, very
insistent,
aggressive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good way to put it. All right. So on that note, I'm going to reach down into our mailbag here. Looks like we've got one from Rob that is embarrassingly old. He says, "Hi, guys. Short-term listener, first-time writer. I was listening to the mailbag section of your latest show about music and had to forward my own suggestion. In fact, a suggestion of a whole genre, dungeon synth.
Ooh.
I found this perfect for gaming as it's moody and atmospheric with a real 70s, 80s twinge without being obvious that you sometimes get with soundtracks." And he gives us a link to the dungeon synth compilations. "Keep up the great work. Enjoying my initial delves into DCC and your podcast." So, thank you, Rob. And I will throw a related question in there since there really isn't a question in here per se. Have we been using music lately for our own games?
Well, I would say, you know, I haven't run a game out of my home for maybe 6 months now. All of the games I've been running have been in either at conventions or at the Brooklyn Strategist. So no, I'm not playing any music during my games at the moment. But I'm very intrigued by this dungeon synth. And I'm sure we'll include the link that Rob included in our show notes.
Oh,
my
yeah.
thing is that it links to a Bandcamp playlist. I would like to ask either Rob or our listeners, because I'm lazy, if anybody's interested in putting together a Spotify playlist of dungeon synth, I would love to spend some time familiarizing myself with it. But I also know that I'm probably not going to do it if it's not in Spotify. But I really dig the idea of dungeon synth. I like synth music. I like electro music and kind of having like maybe a kind of a dark synth pop dungeon exploring experience sounds pretty awesome. So thank you, Rob.
I sometimes use music, especially like when I play Star Wars role-playing games. I just put it on the background. Not so loud, like just to set the mood, because, well, I don't have the coordination to like to judge a game and also choose the exact music to play at the exact moments, appropriate moments. So
we can't all be Bob Brinkman.
Yeah, I don't know how to do this very well. So I just want to put it on the background, not to call too much attention to that, just to bring like some mood. And when I'm playing like Sword and Sorcery, kind of games, I put some soundtracks from Conan movies, Gladiator, or some other movies that has this kind of I don't know, that style of music, like with drums, and set the mood for like a Sword and Sorcery game. But most of the time, yeah, most of the time I forget to do so. But I try sometimes. Just try not to focus too much on it, because I will distract from doing other things, and like I think it's more important than the music, I guess.
I'm right there with you. Don't give me too much to have to think about. And yeah. Most of the games I'm running are concurrent with other people running games, and so, you know, I'm running DCC over here, but Troy's running Bushido at the next table. It's just not gonna work.
Yeah. I try to do voices and sounds with my, like, with my own throat, my own voice, and I think that helps to put people on the mood of the game, or to the sounds or the screams that are happening. But to coordinate music with the exact dramatic importance, it's really hard. Like, that's professional level of DJing or GMing.
Yeah.
So speaking of using your own voice, does that mean that if the song is perfect for the moment, you just start singing it yourself?
Well, I usually put music that don't have like lyrics, like the Star Wars soundtracks or the like Conan soundtracks, the Gladiator soundtrack. So no, I don't.
The orchestral arrangements.
Yeah, I think it's less distracting than music with lyrics, because yeah, somebody will start singing it. Oh, probably, maybe not out loud, but in their heads, so they will be distracted, I guess.
Well, thanks for the email, Rob, and we will definitely look into that.
Would you like me to reach in and grab this next email?
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's going to be a huge scroll.
All right. Well, this one is from a fellow Jeff. It's from Jeff Seifert. I'm not quite sure how to say it.
Sure.
I believe it's Seifert. Jen, hey, I wanted to reach out and say I loved the latest episode of Spellburn with Stefan. Great job to all. Also, I heard the statement about a Swordfish Island project idea. I wanted to let you know that I created DCC stats for all the creatures on the island and several of the hazards. If you are interested, let me know, and I am happy to share. Smiley face. Best, Jeff.
I don't quite know how to portray all of my smiley face heart emoticons over a podcast, Jeff. Yes, thank you, please. Yes, it's going to be glorious, and, in the interest of full disclosure, this email was a couple months ago. It's absolutely awesome, and it's beautiful, and it's almost as good as the original product, and, it's going to save me so much time. So I am forever grateful, and I can't wait to dig into it.
Yes.
And I highly recommend it if anyone else wants to do it.
Yeah, and Jeff, that's fantastic. If you have posted this anywhere online, or if you're going to, please let us know and send us the link, and we'll make sure to include that in the show notes so that we can all check it out.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and we'll cross-reference with Jacob Hurst and the powers that be behind Swordfish Islands as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stepping on toes and all that. But for personal use, it's friggin' amazing. So with that, I encourage you to add to our ever-bursting mailbox and contact us with comments, questions, criticisms, any award nominations at theband@spellburn.com. And with that, we will head over to Mighty Deeds and get some more dirt on our special guest.
Let the combat begin! To the death!
Why, behold, our hero.
Huh, so you want to play rough, eh? Well, take this!
Mighty Deeds.
Okay, Gioga, you knew it was coming. We gotta grill ya. how did you get into gaming?
Well, I got into gaming when I was just about to start high school, and we had to vote about what book we were going to read on class, and it was like an open, anyone could suggest any book, and one of the my friends in school suggested the Death Trap Dungeon for from Fighting Fantasy. For some reason, it was selected, and like all the class had to read through the Death Trap Dungeon. It was in Portuguese, of course, but and then I started looking into these crazy books that you could choose what to do. And soon after that, a friend of mine that was playing like real role playing games came to me and, well, do you like these game books? You're really gonna like this thing here. And it was like the first Brazilian role playing game that's called Tagmar. And yeah, it's similar to Advanced in Dungeons and Dragons. It's like a different system, but it has some similarities, like the way the system works. Starting with that, I soon bought the Challenger box for Dungeons and Dragons. That was the first version of Dungeons and Dragons published in Brazil. And after that, second edition AD&D and all the other stuff that came after. The RPG scene in Brazil really started to grow more in the 90s. We didn't have... First games were published like in the mid-80s here. And mm-hmm. It was mostly like Brazilian games. We didn't have many games from the USA. Like the first edition of Call of Cthulhu being released here is the 7th edition. It's on crowdfunding right now. No, wow. The 6th edition went through crowdfunding like 3 years ago. But it was really a really limited number of books.
So it was primarily Brazilian-based role-playing games versus translations.
Yes.
Nothing wrong with that, man.
Yeah. Dungeons and Dragons was always translated, like always, not always, like after the second edition, we had third edition, like the core books and just a few supplements. And fourth edition, same thing. Well, 5th edition, there is no translation yet, but...
So being somebody who has access to both Brazilian Portuguese role-playing games and American English role-playing games that have both been translated or are in English, I'm curious, are there any games that you've been playing that are Brazilian and or Portuguese role-playing games that you think really should be translated into English so that the American audience or other English-speaking audiences could check out?
The thing is, here in Brazil, at least nowadays, the Brazilian scene is really focused on more like story games, not traditional role-playing games. And I'm more like a traditional role-playing gamer.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like some of the old games, like Tagmar. We had a game called Desafio dos Bandeirantes, which is like a fantasy version of our colonial past. It's really, really nice. But nowadays, I don't follow much of the... We have some old school games here, but they're mostly like retro clones, or not exactly clones, or they call it retro golems because they mix and match things from other editions.
Oh, that's hilarious. I've never heard that term.
I like that.
They don't try to simulate a specific edition, but it's just like D&D. It's not like a darker D&D. It's like D&D with different rules. Yeah, I'm not really into many contemporary Brazilian role-playing games, unfortunately.
Okay, this explains a little bit as we get further in. So how did you discover, of all things, DCC in South America?
Well, I really started back in 2012 after I came back from like a 2 or 3 years hiatus on role-playing games because I was studying for the exams to become a taxman here in Brazil. Well, for the first time in my life, I had money to buy RPGs I wanted because back when I was a teenager, I had to sell my own stuff to buy, like, for me to buy the third edition Dungeons and Dragons, I had to sell my second edition books.
Oh, no.
Right.
Yeah.
It's an evil cycle.
Yeah. And now I had money, and I went to, well, I will buy the current D&D, and I bought like tons of books of 4th edition D&D. And reading them, yeah, reading them, they sound like nice. Wow, it's really well balanced and really well built and et cetera. But when I sat down to play it, the game didn't move. Like, I played it for a whole year and we couldn't finish 3 adventures.
And whoa.
Then I started thinking, this is not what I remember it was. So maybe let's see what other people are playing. And I started hearing about this old school Renaissance thing. And the first game I tried was Labyrinth Lord. And in just 2 hours of a session of 2 hours, I could play the entire adventure. And I was like, oh my God, this is what I want.
Oh, nice.
And I started searching through blogs and forums and started hearing, well, I went to Grognarda and I started reading about the Pulp Fantasy Appendix N and original Dungeons and Dragons. I don't know how one of those blogs or forums said, well, they're making a new role-playing game inspired by the Appendix N with streamlined rules. And I downloaded the Dungeon Crawl Classics beta rules and like was love at first sight. Like it had everything I wanted. And it was, for me, it was like what D&D should always have been, and but never was. Mm-hmm. Never really achieved that level of strange fun, like this pulp fantasy. Like the elf isn't more like this good fellow tree hugger that we're accustomed to seeing current fantasy games. Like they were like these weird entities that had pacts with supernatural creatures to have powers over mortals, and I was like, wow, this is really, really weird, and it's really different, and it really inspires me to read more. And I started digging through Appendix N literature, starting to read Conan, Eric, and Farfadet Grimmauser, and Dying Earth, and I was like, wow, fantasy can be so much more than Lord of the Rings. And it was really a game changer. Yeah, it was really a game changer for me. I remember a phrase someone said, like, DCC is the game where you go through adventure, face terrible creatures, almost die, find ancient treasures, stop a god from being resurrected, and if you survive all of this, you get to go to the first level. Wow, this is insane.
That's amazing. Now, I know that DCC's got a big following in Brazil. I'm curious, are you telling us that you were the one who brought DCC to Brazil, or did several other people kind of follow a similar path and you found other people who had also discovered DCC down there?
Well, I think it would be really pretentious to say I brought DCC to Brazil.
You can be pretentious if you want.
It's okay, man. You could say it.
Okay, I'll rephrase my question. Are you aware of anybody else who was playing it, who wasn't introduced to it, either through you or through people who you introduced it to?
No.
No. Fascinating. Well,
there we go.
The publishers who actually published DCC in Brazil said that it wasn't for me. They would never have thought about bringing DCC to Brazil. Because back in 2002 and 2013, when I started learning about DCC, I would go to conventions here in Brazil, like wearing DCC t-shirts and bringing DCC. I would get a table, like a neutral table. I would put my DCC book there and adventures and just waited there until someone came to talk to me. Like, what is this? Oh, this is Dungeon Crawl Classic. It's a old school game. It harkens back to Appendix and literary. I started talking about the old school Renaissance and what Dungeon Crawl Classic is. And I was, I like, it was like I had a booth for DCC, but But I wasn't working for anyone. I was just like making...
Okay, come on. The Road Crew is all about free advertising. We've acknowledged and embraced this.
Yeah, but I'm really passionate about this game. Like, it's like my favorite game ever. Like, if you had to go to a desert island and could only bring one role-playing game, what would you bring? Dungeon Crawl Classic is for sure. Like,
oh yeah, that's my answer.
Hands down, yes.
Because one of the things that surprises me is, you know, definitely Dungeon Crawl Classics has a very international audience. Lots of people from around the globe play the game. But when I'm looking at least the people who are actively engaged in the online community, it typically tends to be English-speaking countries. So it's like America, Canada, and some people from like England and Australia. But there's this really large Brazilian presence that I don't really see a really large presence from any other non-English-speaking country. It's not like that I'm aware of a huge Korean fan base for DCC or a huge Guatemalan fan base. It really is impressive how engaged the Brazilian fans of the game seem to be with the community.
Well, and to be fair, Brazil's pretty sizable, too.
Of course, yeah, Brazil's huge.
Yeah.
Pretty big. We don't have a really big role-playing community, I guess. It's not so strong here in Brazil because, Brazil doesn't really a fan of reading stuff. People don't read much here.
Oh, God, that's right. And they try to tax books.
Yeah, it's crazy, but... On the Dungeon Crawl Classics Brazilian group in Brazil, we have about 1,300 members. So it's
wow,
it was just published. I think it's really good.
That's really cool.
And you said every Saturday, right?
Yeah,
every single Saturday, not just the first Saturday of every month.
Here in Rio de Janeiro, we have like these mini cons in various places and in various dates. So we almost always have some tabletop role playing counter every weekend. I don't go on all of them, otherwise my wife would kill me.
but I want to now.
I do too. I guess I just need to learn Portuguese.
Right. Yeah,
and the city is really big, so we have some encounters near where I live or somewhere downtown, but we have some encounters really more up north or to the west, and it's really well divided, so people from all areas of the city can go play. It's really good, and we have people doing live streams of DCC down here in Brazil too.
Nice. So we've established that you're essentially the Brazilian patient zero. And well for said. People not familiar, you have your own publishing label, Old Skull Publishing.
Yeah.
When did you create that? I mean, when did you know that you wanted to get into the writing and drawing thing?
I graduated at the art school here in the National University of Brazil. And I worked with graphic design for a few years after I decided I wanted to have money to buy food and role-playing books. So and made an exam to be a taxman. But I always draw. I remember I went to military school. My parents sent me to military school to try to persuade me to become military, and I wanted to do art school, which for them it was like crazy. But I went it anyway because here the graphic design graduation is inside the art school, so I said I was going to do graphic design, and they didn't understand really what that was, but. I was
but
drawing.
You won.
Yeah, I have like I worked with children's book. I have a book published here in Brazil too that I wrote and illustrated.
Wow!
And
okay, we're definitely gonna get the link from you for that and put it on the show notes.
Yeah, it's in Portuguese though, but
so.
I was thinking about translating it.
You know the DCC crew, man. Anything your name is attached to, you don't know what's going to happen.
And also, you know, people buy stuff that they just look at the beautiful art and then put on their shelf and they're never actually open to play anyways. So.
Oh, yeah. I do that all the time. Like, you say it's free shipping and 30% off on Lulu. I'm buying stuff. I don't care what it is. Then I started seeing this. Well, since the desktop publishing, like everyone can do something. One of the things I like about the OSR is exactly that. Like you can share with the world and the other players what you're doing, what you're planning to do, and your vision for your fantasy role playing. I wanted to do that. I wanted to take the things I most like from many games. Like my game that's Sharp Sword and Sinister Spell is like, it's really influenced by Dungeon Crawl Classics and other games too, like Call of Cthulhu, Black Hack, Beyond the Wall, Edge of the Empire. There's a bit about Fiasco there, like the story game. There's a bit of Fate. There's a little bits of various games that I really like to experiment with games. I try to play everything to see if I can steal something. And I want to try to share with people, like, here's what I've done. I gave it to people to see what they can do with that too. Like, the Sharp Sword and Sinister Spell has an open license, and there's people producing stuff with it too.
Yeah, it's a really fantastic system. I've run it before. The book is I ran it at GaryCon, and I have the book. The book is stunning. The artwork inside of it is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is that all yours?
No, it's not all mine. There is a lot of stock art there, but like most of the full page illustrations are mine.
Yeah, all of the really good stuff is yours. My favorite piece in there is definitely one of yours. There's this one where there are these three robed kind of cultists who are looking over this kind of pit, and there are these giant tentacles that are like coming out of the pit. And it's just evocative and cool and just a really beautiful, well-done piece of art.
Yeah, thanks, man. And DCC was actually one of the inspirations for the artwork too. Like, I wanted to make a book. I want to try to make a book as good looking as DCC. I love the DCC artwork. I love it. It's so illustrated. Like, I wanted to put something on every page, and I think I managed to do that. I don't think it's as good as DCC, but I did what I could with the money I could invest on it.
No, it's good stuff. It really is. And it's playable, which yeah. I like. It's streamlined compared to some things, right?
Yeah. And the love of and influence of DCC is very apparent as well.
Yes. And if I'm not mistaken, you have the first non-English DCC zine out there?
Yeah.
I'm going to make you pronounce that one.
There is a non in Spanish. Yeah, it's Caveira Velha.
Yeah, I would have murdered that one.
Yeah, it's actually Old Skull.
Yeah, it translates to Old Skull, yeah.
Yeah. But now, Daniel Bishop says I have to publish it in English, but keeping the Brazilian name.
So
I don't know. Yeah,
all of the art
that
in the zine is yours, right?
No, there's some of my art. There is art from Rafael Balbi. It's a friend of mine. We co-wrote the zine.
Okay.
Cool. I didn't realize you guys were friends. Obviously, if you just meet somebody from Brazil and you're like, hey, I know somebody else from Brazil, do you know him? That would be a ludicrous thing to do. But given that this scene is so small, I'm curious, do you also know Rafael Beltrain?
Yes.
You do? Okay.
Yes.
Because I've interacted with him a lot online. And Jen, I think there's somebody else you wanted to ask about as well.
Yeah, the Goodman Games actually did their little road crew spotlight. I guess they're doing one each week or something this year.
They Magno did Souza.
Very good.
And he's one of your buddies too?
Yeah, I don't know him personally. I know him from internet and
from the
sharing
community
about stuff on the community, on DCC and things like that.
I see.
And so the DCC stuff that you have done, I know your work has appeared in the Gong Farmer's Almanac. You had three pieces. I would be remiss if I did not mention the Sanctum Sacrorum Episode 12 companion zine. We got your barbarian class over there. Mm-hmm. You did this fantastic character sheet art for DCC that I think might be published only in the Goodman Games forums. That was the only place I could dig that up. Maybe on your blog as well.
Yeah.
Then there's my favorite, the Salada de Ratos. The first Portuguese module, I believe.
Rat salad.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an adventure on the zine. It was originally written by Rafael Balbi, but he passed on to me and it suggested some modifications to make it more in line with DCC and the weirdness and the pulp fantasy of it. So we co-wrote some of them, part of it. The original idea was from him, but I had to change some things to make it more playable and adjust the how DCC worked, right?
And you would know better than most over there.
I actually have much, much more DCC content on my Portuguese blog that I have to translate in English. And I have I had a DCC blog in English where I was publishing my Adventures of the Lost World DCC setting.
Mm-hmm.
That I have to finish someday. It's on schedule to finish after.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
So all three of us are big DCC fans, big Appendix N fans. And I'm curious, if you had the opportunity to do art for either the Lankmar line, the Dying Earth line.
Lankmar.
Oh, yeah. Why is that one more evocative for you?
I'm really like a Sword and Sorcery guy. And I really like, like the Lankmar swords, like Forfotting Remalder, they speak to me in some ways. Like it's grittier and but it's fun too. Like they have this humor inside it that it's really fascinating to me. And there were some really strong characters, even female characters that I don't see in other stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. And a bit of gallows humor.
Yeah.
Some of it's dark.
Is it translated into Portuguese? Or are you reading these in English or a little bit of both?
Yeah, I'm reading them in English, yes.
Gotcha. They,
I don't think Forfotting Remalder has any translation here yet.
Okay.
Really?
The publisher that it's publishing, Savage Worlds, here in Brazil, mm-hmm. is bringing the adaptation for Savage Worlds Lankmar.
Hmm.
And they were thinking about trying to license the novels, but they are not sure that it's going to sell. I don't know. It would be really, really nice. But if I can, I prefer reading it on the original language, because sometimes translation butchers everything.
That's a good point. Yeah, if you have the ability to read the original language something's in, I definitely imagine it's a much richer experience to get exactly the words the author intended and not have it filtered through a translator.
Yes.
So are most residents, at least in the Rio area, are most residents bilingual then?
No. No. Well, because most of the education in Brazil is not so good, and many don't have access to English courses and things like that.
Gotcha.
I think some of the people that has the financial capacity to do so will try to learn English because it really helps to get a job, and because, well, you guys live in the country with the greatest economy, with companies that run the world, like the companies are everywhere, and they will prefer to hire people that can speak English. And
fascinating. Yeah.
I also speak a little bit of Italian too.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, so it was my plan to live in Italy, but I didn't have the money to do that.
I'm such a typical American. I speak English and Pig Latin.
So, oh man, even my Pig Latin's rusty. So does that mean we might get rat salad translated into Italian as well? Maybe? Yeah, no.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Well, the Sharp Sword and Censor Spell is being released in Italy.
Really?
Sometime soon. Yes.
Cool.
Awesome.
And there is someone translating it to Spanish. But for the zine, I don't know. Maybe after we publish it, if someone volunteers to translate it, I guess we can release it in another language. I don't know.
Jeez. Okay. So do you have any other DCC projects on the work table?
For now, basically the Caveira Velha issue 0 in English. And we're going to try to expand the Salada de Ratos adventure to put some more paths on the adventure, because in the text it mentions like that it's dangerous to go through the mountains, but there is nothing about the mountains there. So I said to Rafael Balbo, we have to make this perilous mountains path here so we can release it in English. Because for the Brazilian version, we have like a really limited amount of pages we could do.
Oh.
But for the English one, since we're going to probably do a print-on-demand thing, we can go a little over the limit we had in Portuguese. And Adventures of the Lost World. Cause after I finish the setting book for Sharp Sword and Censor Spells, I'm going to be working on that.
And the setting book, is that the Solar Blades and Cosmic Spells?
No, that's the science fantasy. Like it's like a sword and sorcery in space.
Nice, it's sword and planet.
Yes.
Yeah, this one is almost finished. Yeah, it's like maybe in a month or two I will have the text done and I will be able to send it to an editor and a proofreader and see if I can cut something because it's getting too big.
Oh, jeez.
It's like 135,000 words so far.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's...
That's hefty.
Yeah, because
that's bridging on DCC Lankmar size, man.
Yeah, because I merged... Because Sharp Sword and Censor Spells has two books so far, the Corhung book and the Addendum.
Mm-hmm.
And I merged the two for the Storm Blades. Like Storm Blades won't have like an addendum. It's all the contents of the addendum and the Sharp Swords.
Okay, in one cover.
Score book, okay. In one cover. And this time I put some examples because Sharp Sword is really to the point. Really to the point. Like say, when you attack, you roll this to get this result. But I don't give any examples because I assume people know role-playing games. I wanted to make Storm Blades more like beginners friendly, so I'm including some examples on the rules.
Okay.
And I'm already putting a setting on it. So it's like the three books I'm releasing for Sharp Swords in Storm Blades would be just one book.
Nice.
So that's why it's kind of big.
Yeah, that's always an interesting decision point because I know one of the things that I love about the DCC core book is that page that talks about the requirements for opening this tome. And, you know, it's so just like, it's just really funny and well thought out and very clear. And it's like full of, you know, Appendix N stuff and all of the famous old school TSR authors. But like definitely the DCC core book does kind of assume that you have familiarity with role-playing games, which I kind of personally dig. I like it when I open up a book and I don't have to, I don't have to skim past the whole like first few pages telling me what a role-playing game is. But then on the flip side of that, I'm also completely aware that, you know, I'm privileged from coming from a background where I've been playing role-playing games my whole life and not everybody has that. So just because I think it's kind of cool when somebody assumes that I have knowledge that I do have, it's also nice when you can make the game more accessible to people who don't. So I definitely see both sides of that.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe with the editing, we may end up cutting some of that because, yeah, when I read Rongpeng Games 2, I have to read all of this again. And it gets boring, but I try to be really, really succinct on these topics and mm-hmm. examples really succinct too. Well, and because the Summer Blades will have like really like a setting toolkit, like tables for generating sectors and planets and
oh, cool
spaceships and all kind of stuff. All that kind of stuff. That's why it's so big too, because tables.
Oh,
really
yeah.
Occupy a lot of room.
yes, they do. And I love the fact that we could generate settings through Solar Blades and then turn around and use that with Crawl Jammer.
Oh, yeah.
So
for
I really love it, that it's its own system, but in a way it's also system neutral because yeah. it plays so nicely with things like DCC.
Yeah, I wanted to keep it that way too.
That's awesome.
Keep it so anybody can use. Like I have a bunch of like other role playing games that I don't use the gaming, but I use the tables, like the generators.
Mm-hmm.
Like all the Kevin Crawford books have really awesome tools for generating plots, locations, factions. Like if you play Call of Cthulhu, you have to get like Silent Legions. It's really really good to generate even entities like mythos entities and cults and plots. It's a really interesting set of tools.
Sorry, I'm going to show my lack of knowledge here. I don't know Kevin Crawford. Does he write for Call of Cthulhu then?
No, do you know Stars Without Number?
Oh, I don't have that book yet. I should buy that tonight. Everybody I know is obsessed with that book. And I think it's like the top selling on DriveThruRPG right now or something.
Yeah, for like 3 or 4 weeks already. It's really, but all his books are really good.
Okay.
He has a book called Spear of the Dawn. That's like African mythology fantasy.
Ooh.
But what is really great about all his books is that all of them have this really sturdy and functional generators to create like sandbox gaming. Like you're generating locations, factions, and things that are happening. Like you can prepare a lot of stuff to just see what's going to happen. It's really good.
That's really cool. I will definitely check that out.
So I've been doing my homework, and I see that you've fairly recently given a couple interviews, and you were recently on Full Metal RPG podcast.
Ooh.
So I'm going to try not to repeat all the questions and all of the interview stuff there. So instead, I'm going to ask you, what is your favorite thing that you've worked on to date?
And the favorite piece I have... drawing is probably the same as you did, what I liked from the Sharp Sword and Sinister Spell.
Yes.
Like that scene with the three cultists in a cave, yeah. like summoning this grotesque creature.
Oh, so and, good.
It is so intricate.
I had a funny story about that one because I was drawing that and my mom came here in my house and said, "Where the hell do you get ideas from drawing this stuff?" I said, "Well, I saw that on the subway."
And this is the same one that put you in military school. I love it.
I learned it from watching you.
Right?
Yeah, she's amazing. Always says I was always like a weird kid. I don't know.
Yeah, because I look at that and I'm like, this could be in the DCC core book. You know, it's that level quality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, for writing, I don't know. I really liked the original Sharp Sword and Sinister Spells because I wrote it in like, I don't know, 2 weeks or 3 weeks. It was really fast. Like I had this idea, like I had to put it on paper right away or I would forget it. Because before Sharp Sword and Sinister Spells, I wrote a role-playing game called Bruxos e Bárbaros, which would translate to Warlocks and Barbarians. But it was really lengthy. It was really inspired by DCC 2 and Assumption Swordsman Sorcerer of Hyperborea. I wanted to make this huge 500, 600 book.
Oh, wow.
But it was too lengthy. And for Sharp Sword, I had a really sharp mind that determined what I should do and put it exactly the minimum amount, the right amount of stuff that I needed to play a game. And I think it worked well.
Yeah.
At least for me.
Did you?
It was a game I wanted to play, so.
Now, did you write that in English the first time through?
Yes.
Damn.
I write things further in English now because, as I said, the market, the RPG market here in Brazil is really limited. And most of the people I talk to either play mainstream games or are more focused on story games.
Okay.
So the OSR is beginning to grow here. It's growing more with Dungeon Crawl Classics. So I wanted to publish first in English because I figured out if I'm going to learn something, if I'm going to improve my game, I have to release it on where people are doing the best stuff, I guess.
Well, and you know why I ask that. Since I had that sneak peek at the beginning, I have to say, damn, dude, that was good.
Oh, thank you.
So, looking forward for, say, the next 11 months of 2018, what upcoming release are you most looking forward to? I know Julian and Jeff and I hit this on our last show, but figured we should ask our guests that too.
Well, I'm really excited for this is Silankmar.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I'm really excited to see those. I'm sorry. What is the term? The when you're playing it based on how it's written.
Literary.
I'm really excited for the literary Linkmar rule set. Like that, everything I've seen of that looks and sounds so cool. I feel I may be adapting a lot of literary Linkmar for my campaign games, but also probably my Road Crew games as well.
So, well, we all know how you feel about clerics, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. And I love Fleeting Lut. And I love Fleeting Luck. And I love, what is it called? That random thing that you roll to kind of find out what your background is. That kind
The Benisons and Dooms.
The Benisons and Dooms are so cool. Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited for that.
I really like those. And, you know, there's spell stipulations instead of mercurial effects and...
That's cool, too. Yeah, I like that.
I really looking forward for that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yay!
And Forbidden Lands, too. I don't know if you guys are aware of that.
No.
It's like a retro open world survival fantasy RPG with the mechanics from Mutant Year Zero.
Hmm.
Yeah, they hired a bunch of OSR guys to produce stuff for it, too. Like Stretch Goals, they got like... Let me see the names. Like, I think some guys from Lamentation of the Flame Princess.
Nice.
Line. I would like to say I was looking for the Heferi book from Lamentation of the Flame Princess, but I think it's not going to be released this year. And they hired Ben Milton from the... Do you know Ben Milton from the Maze Rats? And the Questing Beasts.
Yes.
Questing Beasts channel.
I've recently been watching his YouTube videos. I didn't know the Questing Beasts YouTube channel until just very recently, and I've been watching them, and they're great.
Yeah. And they really have some really good interviews, too, like with the guy that wrote Blood in the Chocolate.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They hired Patrick Stewart, too. You know if you know.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
The guy from the Veins of the Earth,
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Carl Steinberg, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it, the guy from the Red Hack, and he does really good artwork, too.
Hmm. Are you actually playing all these new games, or?
I wish I had time to play all that. Well,
or are you like the rest of us who just collect books and put them on shelves?
Forbidden Lands hasn't been released yet, but I mostly play DCC, Sharp Sword and Sinister Spells, Lamentation of Flame Princess, and I guess that's most of the play. I'm trying to play more Astonishing Swordman, Sorcerer of Hyperborea too.
Nice. And you mentioned you were planning on being at Gen Con this year?
Oh yeah, I will be at Gen Con this year.
Are you?
I play some Star Wars, the Fantasy Flight games too.
Fantasy Flight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The new Star Wars.
Oh, the new?
Yeah.
What are you planning to run at Gen Con?
DCC.
Nice. Exclusively?
Yeah, because I'm going to be... We're meeting on a financial situation here, so I'm not like getting a badge to be reimbursed because it's... I don't know. So I'm going to be judging the games through Goodman Games, so they're registering me and getting a GM badge and stuff.
Oh, great.
Nice.
And maybe I'll try to jam some Solar Blades or Sharp Swords on off the books, maybe after hours, I don't know.
Ooh, count me in.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I would be way down for that. I would especially be down for Solar Blades because I've never played any kind of a Sword and Planet game, but I would be down for both.
Oh, that's awesome. I hope to have the game finished by then.
Nice.
But it's already playable. I'm already playing it as I'm writing.
Playtesting, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes perfect sense. Well, Geogo, I would like to first off thank you for not yelling at me for butchering your name I don't know how many times. but also I would like to sincerely thank you for coming on the show with us, and you know, our apologies on Julian's behalf, but man, that was some critical fail. Man.
That's totally cool. And my name is really hard too. When I go to Gen Con and I'm going to buy something on Starbucks and say, what's your name? I just say Bob. Or something like that. I know they won't be able to pronounce it.
That is so funny.
It's been a few years since we've had you out here, so it'll be really nice.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. I'm really anxious. When I saw how great Gen Con was last year, like so many people, I was like, oh man, I wish I was there. Like once you go, like I feel like I want to go every year, but
well, yeah,
it's really pricey for me.
Yeah, your first Gen Con was my first Gen Con. And I just want to say, like, you're one of the very first people who really just kind of came up to me and kind of became my buddy at the convention. So I was really grateful for that as well. And it's just been really nice knowing you, and it's great having you on the show. So thank you so much for coming on here.
Yeah, it was great meeting you there, man. I really like going there because you meet people. Like, actually, that Gen Con was my second Gen Con job.
Oh, okay.
Like, the first Gen Con, I met Jen, I met Adam Muscavige from the Metal Gods, if you heard that. And I started hanging out with them.
That was the year that Gabriel made it, right?
Yeah, me and Gabriel, the two South Americans of DCC. It was really cool.
That's awesome.
I met Gabriel. It was so cool because I was just meeting these people, and I started hanging out with them like every day and started talking to them over the internet and joined them on games online. It was really, really, really great. And I remember like... people in Brazil are really, really warm to each other. Like, we hug all the time. Like, and we always had this vision from, like, the Americans are, like, a little more cold. Like, they just have to keep your personal space and stuff. And, Jen, I was really impressed when I was leaving Gen Con, like, my first time I went, and you hugged me. I was, like, really, really impressed for that. I was really, really thankful. I felt really welcome on the community and for you. It was really, really great.
That's really sweet.
Thanks a lot for that.
I'm a hugger. Yeah.
Come over here.
Thank you for that.
We're all family, man.
All right, three of us. Yeah. Big group hug.
Yes, group hugs.
Yay.
Oh, man. Well, thank you to our listeners for indulging us and for getting to know Geogo with us. And, you know, Oh, come on. I still think you're one of the honorary judges here. And Jyogo, judge, it's close enough. So thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. Of course, if you'd like to leave us any reviews on iTunes, don't start flame wars. What am I missing, Jeff? Twitter, G+.
I tried to leave a review once for Spellburn, but I don't know if you guys can see the reviews from the Brazilian iTunes.
I don't know.
Because it's separate.
That'll be a really good question for our web guys.
Yes.
Jeff, am I missing anything?
I don't think so. I think
it's a late night. I'm missing stuff.
Email us at theband@spellburn.com. We've got show notes at spellburn.com. You can tweet at us on Twitter. Say hi to any of us individually on G+. We don't have a Spellburn group on G+, but there's a very active Dungeon Crawl Classics group on Google+. If you want to go onto there and interact with us, that's a great place to do it.
And Facebook has the DCC RPG Rocks group. We're all there. Jeff and I are there individually. We'll pass messages on for Julian.
Julian does not Facebook.
Yeah, you know, some days I think he's not too dumb on that one.
I know. Every now and again, I'm just like, those people I know who seem like they're weird little hermits who refuse to do Facebook may be the ones who are really onto something.
James Raggi joined. Come on. The world is coming to an end. And of course, we'll have links on the show notes to Jyogo's various appearances in print and whatnot, his blogs. And I want that link to your book.
Okay, I will send you. There is a web page of my children's book illustration too. I can send you guys to.
Ooh.
Oh, that's awesome.
That sounds amazing.
It's very different from the work I do for role playing games.
It's less gory.
Oh, not so much.
Fewer sacrifices. Yeah.
But I want to make a role playing game for children I want to make a children's role playing games so and they can like color it like a coloring book role playing game.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
I hope to use the sharp swords, like it's a simple system. I'm going to use it for that. But
I know the original AD&D Monster Manual was often used as a coloring book by kids.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We can just pretend it's DCC, right? For the purposes of this show. Well, on that note, we will catch you next show, guys. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, catch you guys later.
You've been listening to Spellburn. Copyright 2017. Our theme song has been graciously provided by Glitter Wizard. Learn more at glitterwizard.bandcamp.com.